Welcome, everyone. My name is Representative Cheryl Iwaki, and I'm the chair of the House Education Policy Committee. I would like to call this remote hearing of the Committee on Education Policy to order. And I'd like to welcome members, nonpartisan staff, caucus staff, and the public who's viewing this inaugural remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee. We have a few housekeeping items to go over, but the primary item on the agenda today is House File 4415, a bill from Representative Dabney. The intention of the chair is to move this bill and have a vote at the end of this committee hearing so that it can move on to Education Finance Division. As this is the first remote hearing of this committee, I would like to first take a few minutes to review some of the procedures for the public and members, and I hear Representative Ertl joining us. Remote hearings are possible thanks to the newly passed Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked in our public meeting notice on the House website. All the remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Various methods to view the hearing are available on the committee webpage. We will be muting and unmuting members in order to preserve the sound quality. I will try to remember to tell folks when we're muting and unmuting so that you know. We'll be taking roll call for the attendance and for voting. We will pause to unmute all the microphones. But you can also, once we unmute all the microphones, it would be helpful for sound quality if you still mute yours until you have to vote. Message will pop up on your screen to let you know that you're unmuted. Members dialed on the phone will be automatically unmuted. Once the roll is complete, we will pause again to place everyone back on mute and then unmute the chair. So I know this feels a little awkward and we may have to take things slow to start with, but I think we're up to the task. All committee discussion will still go through the chair. Questions of testifiers, legislators, and nonpartisan staff will be permitted, but only going to the chair, as always. To request recognition by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to do the raise your hand feature. Staff will place your name on a list to be recognized. Staff will lower your hand once your name has been added to the list. If a member dialed in by phone and doesn't have access to raise your hand feature, please email or text the CA or CLA for the directions in your virtual member packet, and then we'll put your question in the queue. This is digital equivalent of getting the attention of the chair and the CA. An email for your House account with the subject line, please recognize, is all that's required if you're on the phone. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them and for the public. These materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items, in one place it can be found in the email that's labeled virtual member packet that was sent by Megan Ariola, our committee legislative assistant. Members, the items in your virtual packet are as follows. Meeting agenda, meetings from March 11th, 2020, House research summary of the Delete Everything Amendment labeled House File 4415 DE10, bill text for House File 4415, and letters and documents submitted to the public from education associations, Minnesota Independent School Forum, Ed Allies, and written testimony from Kendra Cottoff from Farmington Schools. These items are also posted on the committee webpage in an OCR-compatible format. I would like to thank staff for getting that taken care of. So now, members, first, before we start the roll call, does anybody have any questions on procedure? Seeing none, we're going to move to the roll. Ms. Arreola, will you please take the roll? We're going to pause to unmute, and the CLA will now take the roll call.
Chair Joachim.
Present.
Representative Kunesh Padin.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Present.
Representative Baker.
Here.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Here.
Representative Christensen.
Here.
Representative Grunhagen.
Here.
Representative Hassan.
Here.
Representative Herr.
Here.
Representative Jordan.
Here.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Here.
Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Here.
Representative Erdahl.
I'm as here as I'm going to get, but I'm trying to get closer.
Representative Wasloick.
Here.
Representative Mariani, I see, is connected, but his audio is a little difficult right now, so we will count him as here.
Members, we have a quorum. Next, we'll move to the adoption of previous meetings. That's our next order of business, is to adopt the minutes from Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. A copy of the minutes are in your virtual packet. Representative Herr moves to adopt the minutes from March 11th, 2020. Members, are there any questions on this motion? Sorry for the awkward pause, just making sure no one has questions. Seeing no questions, the CLA will take the roll on the motion to adopt the minutes from March 11th, 2020.
Chair Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Kunesh Padin.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Yes.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Aye, and I can see you now.
Representative Wasloick.
Aye.
Representative Mariani.
Aye.
18 ayes, 0 nays.
Members, there being 18 ayes and 0 nays, the minutes from March 11th, 2020 have been adopted. We will now pause for the staff to remute the microphone. Next on the agenda is the bill we will be hearing today, House File 4415 of Representative Dabney's. Members in the public, there is a Delete Everything amendment to this bill in your packets and posted online. The version we are looking at is House File 4415-DE10. The motion today will be to vote to re-refer the bill to the Education Finance Division. Members, are there any questions? Seeing no questions, in order to bring the bill before the committee, Representative Christensen moves that House File 4415 be referred to the Education Finance Division. In order to get the bill in the shape the author would like to hear it, Representative Christensen also moves the DE10 amendment. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment. We'll now pause.
Representative Joachim, I'm sorry. Representative Grunhagen does have a question. It just popped up.
Oh, thank you. Representative Grunhagen, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is, has this been agreed with on the Senate side, this language?
Representative Grunhagen, that is still working. That's why we're sending it over to Ed Finance, because they're the ones that will have the most time to hash out the majority of the finance issues which folks are looking at. So we'll be just dealing with the policy today and moving it forward. It still has other committees, that other committee staff. So there still needs to be time to have the final five-way agreement.
Okay.
Members, are there any other questions to the DE10 amendment? And then we'll go move into discussion and testimony and all the stuff we usually do in committee. This is just to move the bill into the shape the author would like to present it. Seeing no more questions, the CLA will take the roll to move to adopt the DE10 amendment. And she will unmute the microphones for that.
Chair Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Kanesh Padin.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Barr.
Yes.
Representative Baker.
Yes.
Representative Bennett.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Christensen.
Yes.
Representative Grünhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hassan.
Yes.
Representative Herr.
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Moeller.
Yes.
Representative Sandel.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Yep.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Yes.
18 ayes, 0 nays.
18 ayes, 0 nays. House File 4415 is amended with the DE10 amendment. Now the bill is in the shape the author would like. Representative Dabney is going to proceed with his testimony. I believe he has two testifiers as well. When they come on, if they would state their name fully for the record, that would be wonderful. After that, we'll take quick questions to Representative Dabney, and then there's other folks in the public that have signed up to testify. We'll go to those testifiers and then take questions after that. So first, Representative Dabney, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members. Madam Chair, thank you for this opportunity. I will do my best to focus my comments and bill presentation on the policy dimensions of the bill. The goal with this legislation is to support schools, staff, students, and families by directing a stable and predictable path amid what will likely feel, or does feel for many of us, and is in fact a challenging situation. Minnesotans are asking all of their elected officials at this point to stand up and lead in the face of this crisis. With House File 4415 as amended, we're looking forward. We're anticipating the challenges that schools, staff, and students will experience, and we're planning for them. I'm pleased to have had bipartisan involvement in the construction of this bill. This also is our opportunity as the Minnesota House to assert our role as a co-equal branch of government and the policy-making branch of government to boot. We propose through this bill to keep school districts whole financially to the greatest extent possible so that they can then pay their hourly workers, keeping those workers whole, their families whole, and allowing them to then be a positive economic force in their communities, particularly as so many Main Street businesses are challenged by the current abrupt economic changes. It's really a bottom-up approach to rebuilding Minnesota's economy and asking the schools to play a part in their communities in that way. We allow school district accounting systems to categorize expenditures in the state UFARS system around employee salary and benefits as if they were performing their regular jobs, even if they've reassigned those staff to other jobs during this period of distance learning. That's for clarity. We propose, with students involved in distance learning, assuring that this year's high school seniors still get to graduate. this year's third graders get to become next year's fourth graders, and so on. We also, by doing so, really join the national trend to trying to hold students harmless in this, that in this much different situation than they expected in the beginning of this school year, that they not pay a price because of challenges with distance learning or challenges with technology and other related issues. We direct the commissioner to waive the state statutory requirement for the MCA tests this year, as well as the state statutory requirement that a nationally normed college preparation test be administered during the school day, because that appears to be impossible. We propose in another area of the bill to protecting teachers, administrators, and student teachers, moving forward on establishing or renewing their license to assure that they can, again, greet students hopefully at the schoolhouse door in the fall. We allow student teachers to achieve licensure even if their experience fell a little bit short of the required number of days, because we recognize there's a teacher shortage in Minnesota. We want those who are doing well in their student teacher program to move forward to licensure. And we provide probationary teachers with the credit that they need to continue towards tenure or continuing contract status, depending on the district they work in. Madam Chair, that is the oversight on the bill. I know you've got a list of testifiers, and I'd welcome them to the table at this time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I believe you have two testifiers. If you want to have them proceed first, and then we'll move to some more questions. We'll move to questions for you before the other list of testifiers.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm trying to see if I've got their names. Do you?
Yes, here. Sorry, Mr. Representative Dabney. I keep
Thank
wanting
you.
To call you Mr. Chair.
No.
I might need a little help. Oh, sorry. Now I'm seeing. I think our first testifier actually is Commissioner Mary Catherine Ricker is on the line. Commissioner, thank you for joining us today. You get to kick us off.
You're welcome. Hey, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is Mary Catherine Ricker and Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Education. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide some thoughts on DE 10 as it is to House File 4415. I also appreciate the latitude given by the chair to comment on finance and policy provisions. I will attempt to make my finance comments relevant to this policy. At its core, this bill sends an important message to our educators and districts that we value everyone in our school community. Providing assurances that everyone will be able to put food on their table, pay their bills, and maintain affordable health care is crucial in these uncertain times. This bill sets the highest expectations to exhaust every tool in the toolbox to pay workers before considering layoffs. It would not prohibit layoffs, but establish clear steps that must be taken before getting to that decision. It provides a more consistent expectation statewide rather than a patchwork result. One of the things we have been hearing is that one district may be making budgetary decisions differently than a neighboring one, and this has been creating confusion and consternation. This bill would align expectations. With the legislature acting on this, it shows the state that we have true agreement on the value of all of our school workers. Distance learning is an unprecedented act for our schools. Administrators need to meet this challenge by thinking creatively about how to deploy school workers. And I have had a lot of really productive conversations with school leaders on exactly that. Leveraging the skills and unique abilities of our staff is a key component to equitable distance learning. I know that most districts and schools are trying as hard as they can to provide meaningful work to employees to better meet the needs of our students in this distance learning situation. And I've received many messages about financial difficulties. That's why I appreciate Chair Dabney's addition of language that expands fund transfer flexibility to Executive Order 20-19. This is an important tool in the toolbox for districts and charter schools. This language will allow our schools to flexibly transfer funds not already dedicated to salaries and benefits from almost any fund to now support community education workers, nutrition workers, and much needed technology supports to support distance learning. This is in addition to transportation costs associated with meals, as well as costs associated with providing school-age care to the children of our first responders, our healthcare workers, and our critical care workers. I also appreciate this bill's inclusion of a fix for future literacy incentive aid distributions. Without action, the cancellation of this year's statewide accountability assessments, the MCAs, would have a substantial downward impact on the next few years' literacy incentive aid. This change provides districts with financial certainty. I am also supportive of the measures to protect our probationary teachers and those seeking new license and relicensure. However, I am suggesting several additions that would also improve the bill. I have asked Chair Dabney to include expanding the use of regional library telecommunications aid to include increased internet and technology access. This will greatly improve distance learning services in our underserved communities where it's needed. Second, I ask for the inclusion of a forecast article and a range of technical corrections. This will provide school districts with stable and predictable funding as many of the COVID-19 proposals are built off of the February forecast. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on this bill, and I am happy to stand for any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I am going to break in here quick because I forgot to mention, I wanted to do another announcement for members of the public. This is an open meeting. If you would like to make a comment and time remains on our agenda, we have to be done by 4 o'clock. After our testifier list concludes, please email edpolicy@house.mn. That is edpolicy@house.mn. With an email that says public testimony, and committee staff will send you the login credentials for this meeting. Please also state in the email your name, any organization you're affiliated with, and what your question or comment is in case the technology prevents us from having you virtually present in the meeting. We will do the best we can to have members of the public weigh in virtually at the end of the public planned testimony. We're going to move on next to the next testifier. We have Marty Hurst, Field Service Support Technician from St. Paul Schools. Could you please state your name for the record? Oh, I see that Representative Erdahl, you had a brief question if it was for the commissioner. Otherwise, we could save our questions until the end. Representative Erdahl, is your question for the commissioner?
No, it's for Representative Dabney at the end.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. We'll have our next testifier then. Marty Hurst, the Field Service Support Technician from St. Paul Schools. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Martin Hurth, and I'm a field service support technician for St. Paul Public Schools. I've worked in the district for over 8 years. I've spent the last 3 weeks providing remote support to our staff, parents, and students to provide distance learning for the remainder of the year. I'm here today to talk about how important it is for our hourly workers to continue to be paid during this public health crisis. There is a group of workers that are particularly vulnerable, those of us that are funded through fee-based services, and without your support, it will become extremely difficult for school districts to keep them employed. Paraprofessionals, nutrition support workers, services workers, and community education staff are all at risk of being laid off. This is an issue of equity. Our workers are very diverse, with many of them being Black and Brown, first-generation Americans. We rely heavily on this income to stay afloat. We are often part-time workers, and unemployment insurance from being laid off would not be enough to stay above water. Our hourly workers work just as hard, love our students just as much, and provide as valuable of experiences for our kids as anybody in the district, but we are facing unknown employment status during this crisis. During this time, services are changing, but they are continuing. We have all taken on expanded duties during the crisis and are making our best effort to make our schools work for the students of St. Paul. Many of these workers are also single parents, and during the normal work year, work two jobs or more to pay the bills. One common job that I hear as a second job is that of a waiter or waitress. With this crisis, they now have only one job, and that is at risk. The hourly community ed staff, like building aides that help facilitate adult and youth classes, are now not getting paid because classes have been canceled. While these are part-time positions, most people take these to supplement their daytime position to try and make something that equals a living wage. It is for these workers, their families, and the students they serve that I ask you to support House File 4415. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hirth. Next, we have Jeannie Fox. She's an educational support professional from Osseo Schools. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jean Fox. For the past 14 years, I've been an educational support professional, ESP, in the Osseo School District. I am an EL English learner, ESP at Park Center Senior High and IB World School in Brooklyn Park, and Kids Stop ESP at Basswood Elementary in Maple Grove. As an experienced ESP, I have known how essential my position as an hourly employee is in supporting student learning. In this new reality, it is even more critical to continue supporting students, not only academically, but especially emotionally in these uncertain times for students. In my role as an ESP in the emergency childcare facilities, my daily routine with students has changed dramatically. I work with students and staff to ensure that facilities are using the recommended safety practices. This includes continually keeping surfaces sanitized, ensuring that students keep social distancing, and practicing hand washing every time a student transitions. Programming has been set up to reflect more normal academic school day. During this time, ESPs assist with assigned school work. This includes assisting students with their technology so that they can attend their virtual class meetings. For some students, it's assisting them with completing packets. This provides support for the students to complete their work while at childcare. In my role as the ELESP working with high school students, my day has shifted from a 6-hour school day to anywhere from 8 to 10 hours. To meet the needs of students. I'm assisting high school students with their academic needs through virtual study hall meets. This includes active academic support to assist students with language barriers and to provide clear academic expectations that have previously been taught by licensed staff. Many students are struggling with this new normal and want to express their feelings with someone they trust. They're having regular virtual meetings with licensed staff to collaborate on programming for students in ways we have never before experienced. We have been asked to do new things, to learn new things, and provide support in a whole new way. As we have seen, hourly employees play a vital role in supporting our students and families. By not continuing to pay hourly employees, there will be a significant impact on employees, students, and families. Oftentimes, we are the lifeline for students. We are the first ones they see in the morning. We support them throughout the day, and often the last one they see before they go home.
Licensed staff cannot possibly keep up with students. Ms. Fox, I hate to interrupt you.
Without the support of hourly employees, who often are the staff who have the connections with students. Without these connections with students, I fear that these students will slip through the cracks. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to share my experiences today. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Your audio was breaking up a little bit, so it might be helpful if you also send us your written comments.
Okay. I will do that. Can you hear me now? Yes.
It's breaking up. So just go ahead and send us your written comments as well. We heard some of it. We're going to move on to Dr. Kathleen Holmes Campbell. She's the Dean of the School of Education at University of St. Thomas. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. Kathleen Campbell, and I am the Dean of the School of Education at the University of St. Thomas. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the 111 student teachers at St. Thomas, but also student teachers across the state of Minnesota. Today, I'm here to support House File 4415, particularly Article 3. Due to the closure of testing sites, our student teachers are unable to take the required Minnesota teacher licensure examinations. I'm hopeful that the committee supports allowing Pelsby to issue a one-year conditional Tier 3 license for potential new teachers impacted by COVID-19. As a dean of the School of Education, I'm proud of the resiliency and flexibility our student teachers have shown. They've been tested in ways that other student teachers have never had to face. Their success in rising to the challenges can only strengthen the case for a one-year conditional Tier 3 license. Over the last few weeks, I've received numerous emails from cooperating teachers in K-12 classrooms thanking our student teachers for supporting them and their students. While the teaching conditions are obviously not ideal at present, I believe this new group of teachers entering our educational system will, as a consequence of those challenges, be prepared to pivot and utilize the technological skills they've gained over the last couple of weeks and throughout our program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Representative Scott, Representative Baker, I have you on the list. I want to get through the list of testifiers first, and I also will make sure Representative Erdahl's on the list because he could wait. If it's a question for a particular testifier, I'm almost sure they're all going to be around till the end, but make sure you let our CLA know if it's a more immediate question. So next we have Diane Amundsen. She's a school bus driver from Sartell. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Bus driver in Sartell. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Diane Amundsen. I am a school bus driver in Sartell School District and a union steward with SEIU Local 284. Bus drivers work hard to make sure that our kids have a safe ride and a supportive environment, and I know that the kids and parents appreciate that. You should see the hall they give me at Christmas time. The COVID-19 pandemic has changed how we do the work, but it hasn't changed our commitment to the kids and the community. I joined this meeting a little bit late today because I was finishing up my last drop-off of the day. I drive three little kids, including one with special needs, in a van to our child care center at school. There's no way to do this and do our social distancing in a van, and I worry that I'm putting my own health and the health of my husband in danger to continue to serve the community and the school. We're told by our districts we haul the most precious of cargo, but when unexpected and unprecedented school closures happened last winter, we were not treated like the valuable employees I know we are. We were not paid for the 6 days, but our bills didn't stop because of the snow. My husband Randy and I were able to dip into our savings and put the balance on a credit card. And because we became empty nesters last year, we had a little extra wiggle room. But I know that we're lucky. Because I am a steward, my coworkers feel comfortable sharing their struggles with me. And I know plenty of people who had to choose between food, bills, and medicine, knowing that they couldn't afford all three. Losing around $1,000 was devastated. What was more devastating was then finding out salaried staff were still paid and learning that others in the school districts chose to pay their hourly staff. Our district did not allow us to cash in our sick days or any other paid time off to help us through this. Those 6 days were without pay, really hard on us all in Sartell. What we're looking at now, an indefinite school closure. My family won't make it. My income pays our mortgage, and I need to save up now to cover the summer when I don't have income because we don't get unemployment insurance. I also worry about the dominoes falling. My husband works for DeZurich. Their sales force is not traveling. They get their castings from China. And when a machine breaks down, they often need people from Germany to come and fix it. Even if my husband's income was guaranteed, we wouldn't be able to make it on his income alone. Like I said, Randy and I are lucky compared to many of my coworkers who, even in the best of times, struggle to support to keep their families and themselves healthy. It's incredibly important that you pass this bill to ensure hourly school staff are kept whole through this crisis. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Amundson, for your testimony. Next, we have Kathy Erickson, the business manager from Duluth Public Schools, and William Grant, test superintendent from Duluth. Please state your names for the record and proceed. I don't know which one of you wants to go first.
I'm going first. Chair Joachim, honorable members of the committee, my name is Bill Gronseth. I'm superintendent of the Duluth Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. These are extraordinary times, and our staff have taken extraordinary measures to ensure that we have an equitable and an accessible approach to all that we are doing. It began with providing childcare to Tier 1 families. Our childcare is open from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. This is above and beyond the ask of the executive orders. We have a long-standing partnership with the YMCA for our before and after school care programs. Our food service is also important to many of our families. We knew that not all of our students would have the means to come to school to pick up those meals. And for this reason, we are delivering about 1,800 students throughout the district using our buses. It may be necessary to reduce our outreach of this service if we don't have the funding or the staff to continue. We especially took equitable and accessible to heart when designing our distance learning program. Over 1,000 of Duluth School's 8,500 students do not have internet. For this reason, we are providing paper packets to students who need them. Our secondary students have individualized packets based on their course schedule. As you can imagine, this is a lot of work. Packets for each course have to be printed, then individualized based on student schedules. This would not be possible without our curriculum leaders, teachers, print shop, maintenance staff, district staff, bus drivers, paraprofessionals. This is all dependent upon the health of our staff and the community. We're doing the best we can to keep everyone safe, encouraging hand washing, covering coughs, staying at home when ill, and now recommending cloth face coverings as appropriate. Should our staff be exposed to the virus or become ill, or if they do not feel safe continuing, we may find that we need to reduce the breadth of our services. We're asking much of our staff. They're committed and they're dedicated to our students and their families and our community, and many of them are afraid. It's understandable. As you're making decisions regarding the school's response to COVID-19, know that our commitment to our students, our staff, and our communities remains strong, and know that we need your support, both financially and politically, to continue to provide services at this level. Kathy?
Thank you, Superintendent Grimseth. Next, we have Kathy Erickson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Kathy Erickson, and I am the Director of Business Services for Duluth Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit more about our journey since the announcement of the first executive order for COVID-19. As Superintendent Grimseth just shared with you, we have designed our systems of support for our district staff to have the ability to work, which for many meant a reassignment to support the priorities outlined in the executive orders. As Superintendent Gronseth mentioned, we partnered with our local YMCA to have them provide coordination with our free childcare when this would normally be a fee-based program. We intend to use our reserves to support having this coordination of our childcare programming as long as we are able to. Our food service will also be using reserves in order to utilize our nutrition staff in most of our buildings and to allow for meal deliveries throughout the city of Duluth. As many of you know, Duluth Public Schools has been working through some financial challenges. We visited with most of you last year about our special education loss due to the special education funding challenges back in 2016. This funding loss has compounded ever since, and as we strive to exceed the expectations of the executive orders and guidance provided by the Departments of Education and Health, and most importantly, considering the needs of our students, staff, and community, the added financial burdens like our special education funding loss make this uncertain time even more challenging for us. Our goals will not change, but I worry that our lack of financial capacity will put a strain on our ability not only to address our current critical needs, but how we will work to create a fiscally responsible fiscal year 21 budget. All districts are unique, and anything you can do to provide flexibility for districts to meet our goals and our critical needs from a funding perspective is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Erickson. Next, we have Michelle Kofa from Ed Allies. Will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Kofa, and I'm the policy manager at Ed Allies, an advocacy organization that works to advance educational equity and remove barriers so all Minnesota students can receive a rigorous and engaging education. I'm here to express my concerns about HF 4415 as amended. While this bill has some excellent provisions to respond to the needs of hourly employees, address school finance formulas, and grant the Commission of Education power to waive certain requirements during the time of COVID, the bill leaves out one very important group of people, our students. With distance learning plans being implemented across the state, it is crucial that the legislature respond to the emerging needs of students. Ed Allies recently did a survey asking students, families, teachers, and advocates what our students need in the time of COVID-19. And our responses tell us that our state legislators need to focus on things like access to dependable internet and technology, additional supports for English language learners and students with special needs, and access to school meals. With over 17% of students in Minnesota, especially our low-income and rural students, not having access to the internet to do distance learning, our state's educational gaps will continue to grow. Although distance learning isn't synonymous with e-learning, it is an issue of equity if our underserved students are not given the resources they need to receive a meaningful education. The federal government has responded to the needs of students through the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act, but the committee and the entire legislature has to do the same and do so quickly. We cannot wait for federal funds to meet the immediate needs of our students. What happens if federal funds don't come for months? Are we willing to allow our students to fall behind academically because their needs are not being met? The legislature must act through policy and supplemental funding to meet these needs. Our students are being asked to sacrifice a lot while adapting to a new way of learning, and the least we can do is to provide them the resources they need to succeed. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Kofa. Next, we have Gary Amorosa, Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Amoroso. I have the honor of serving as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Today, I am also speaking on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota School Board Association, Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity and Excellence, Schools for Equity and Education, I should say, I apologize. The Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, Minnesota Community Education Association, Minnesota School Nutrition Association, and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. Thank you for allowing me to share a few thoughts. School districts are doing everything possible to execute and comply with the governor's executive orders. Without question, teachers, all of our support staff, administrators, and school board members have gone beyond their traditional mission and worked tirelessly to meet the needs of our communities by providing the childcare for children of our healthcare professionals and other essential workers and serving breakfast and lunch to our students. We fully support the executive order and MDE guidance clarifying that hourly employees in programs with dedicated funding streams must be retained and paid in accordance with applicable local labor agreements. In addition, MDE guidance clarified that districts are not precluded from making budget-based layoffs for programs where dedicated funding streams don't exist. Though this is not a direction districts want to move in, we wonder if this language could be included in this bill. Thank you for including Article 2 of the formula adjustments. These are forecasted revenues that would otherwise fall to the state's bottom line without this legislation. Ensuring schools continue to receive these funds will help us preserve staff positions and programs as we work through the distance learning period and prepare for the 2020-2021 school year. We would also greatly appreciate the inclusion of the forecast adjustments that are necessary and routine adjustments to reflect the most recent budget forecasts and pupil counts. While we understand the legislature could come back to take up other legislation at a later date, addressing that now would reduce uncertainty and confusion for our school districts as they are already engaged in the budget planning for next year. Also, we would like to see language clarifying that the special education coding and reporting issues addressed in the executive order and MDE guidance will have the force of law after the emergency powers have expired. We remain hopeful that the state will be able to provide some additional resources to help districts cover the amount of lost fees revenue school districts have realized in their community and food service funds. School districts are doing everything possible to execute and comply with the governor's executive orders as it relates to paying and retaining their employees. However, for these areas where fee revenue is the primary source to pay salaries, districts are finding the challenges mounting. They're mounting on a daily basis. Lastly, we are working to have a better understanding that the impact of the federal relief package, the CARES Act, will have. We're concerned, though, that the federal funding will not address the shortfalls we know our districts are faced with, as the bulk of the federal funds will be based on previous Title I allocations. There will be wide variations in the distribution of the aid among school districts, with many districts receiving very little assistance. With that, again, I thank you for providing me this opportunity to share some thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Members, that concludes the testifiers that have signed up. I want to move to questions from members and questions for the testifiers. And then if there is time at the very end, we will open to public comments. So first, I have on the list Representative Erdahl.
Now I'm unmuted. I'm finally getting figured out here. 20 to 30% of our school districts are not following the governor or MDE guidelines regarding school bus contracts. The expectation is that they treat routes as if they're happening, the daily routes. Now, our school bus contract.
Representative Erdahl, can you quickly just mute your other device because we're hearing an echo? So whatever one you're talking in, leave that one unmuted and then mute the one you're watching.
Mute the one I'm watching.
All right, how's that?
That's great.
Good. Should I start over?
Yes, please.
All right. I'm just learning this stuff. This is my first experience on this. Thank you, Madam Chair. 20 to 30% of our school districts are not following the governor or MDA guidelines regarding school bus contracts. The expectation is that they should treat the routes as if they're happening, the daily routes. Now, they're already losing activities and field trips. That's about 15% of their revenue. And we should look on this as kind of an insurance policy. If we don't keep the bus companies whole, bus drivers are going to be laid off. We have shortages now. And when May comes, if suddenly we're able to have school again, they're going to have trouble getting drivers. So my question of Representative Dabney is, does this address the school bus drivers and the contractors?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl. Yes, it does. It does direct that vendors, so school bus companies for those districts that use private vendors to supply bus service would get paid if the vendor agreed to then pay their employees. You show the value of the staff training, the hiring and staff training that's gone into paying those bus drivers, and the value then of retaining them for school districts and vendors. Thank you for that.
All right, thank you.
I have Representative Scott next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney, for your work on this. I know this cannot be easy right now in the state of things. And, you know, I, like you and probably everybody on this call, have great concerns about how this pandemic is affecting people as far as their ability to meet their monthly obligations. And I certainly do not discount that in any way. I have a friend, and she's a single mom of four kids. She was working as a waitress at a fairly nice restaurant. She hasn't worked for over a month. Her unemployment's going to cover about half of her, what she was making before. And so I just don't know how we can say that, you know, we can afford to pay school district employees or school district contracted people that aren't working when we can't do the same for everybody in this really difficult time. And it has a trickle down effect. It's, you know, if they can't pay their rent, then the landlords can't pay their mortgages, and it just keeps going on and on and on. And so I don't know what the answer is. I just wish we could get the kids back to school. I guess that would be the solution to this. But I understand that's probably not going to happen, but I just wanted to put that out there, that I have concerns about everybody meeting their monthly obligations, my and my husband included in that. So it's concerning. I just don't know how we can pay people that aren't working in one sector of the economy and not treat everybody the same. So that was really my only comment. And thank you for your work on this.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for the kind words there. I think there's a couple of responses. One is your friend will not, who's the waitress, will not be better off if school district employees fail to get paid. That will only mean that they do not have the money to then go out to that restaurant once it reopens, which will continue to undermine her economic situation. And secondly, there's a fundamental different economics to the private sector and the public sector. School districts are going to receive all of the funding that they anticipated, or almost all that they anticipated. That restaurant is not. And I think we recognize that fundamental difference, which is why we ask or direct the school districts to pay their employees. They should not be coming out of this epidemic with a larger budget reserves than they went into it, when we need those staff to be able to meet their monthly obligations and support the businesses in their communities for the betterment of all of Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Scott, you had a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to respond to that. And I don't want to get in a back and forth tit for tat here or anything, but I don't think that my friend that's a waitress is going to see this as an apples to apples comparison. She's not going to see the whatever potential benefit you just raised. Right now, she just wants to get her bills paid. She just wants to be able to pay her bills and keep a roof over her head. And when people look around and they see, you know, one sector being treated differently than they're being treated, and they have no end in sight as to when they can even get back to work. She doesn't know whether to take a different job. And if she does, then who takes care of her kids? Because now she has to stay home with them. So it's a tough situation for everybody. And so I just hope that we can move forward and find an equitable solution. And everybody's going to share in the pain. That's, we all are. unfortunately.
Representative Dabney, any follow-up?
It's a painful time for everyone. Representative Scott is right.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. And I'm not doing the Erdahl thing, right, with that funky reverberation?
No, you are not.
All right. Well, very quickly, I want to thank Ed Allies for their first of all, I want to thank Representative Dabney for this work. It's a lot of work to have pulled together pretty quickly under these times, and it's much needed. So I appreciate your leadership, sir. I do want to thank Ed Allies for their testimony. It just so happens that the organization that I'm affiliated with, most of you know I'm connected with the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. We had just convened within the last week a group of folks involved in EML services, or services for EL students. And so these were educators from different districts, and they shared a number of concerns relative to the capacity and the practices that school districts are struggling with in regards to meeting the needs of EML, EL students during this period of time. And so I'm not gonna say a whole lot because I'm gonna forward our letter. We were just in the process of having a letter forwarded to you, Madam Chair, and also to Chair Dabney, as well as to the governor and the commissioner and several others. But basically, just distilling together the concerns and the recommendations from this cross-district group of EL educators that focused on both the now and also the intermediate structural issues that can help ensure that we're doing our best in terms of EML and EL students. A number of that really having to do with access to technology, including physical access to laptops, Chromebooks, tablets, which are not necessarily happening in some districts across the state for a whole host of reasons. I suspect funding is probably the primary one, as well as access for EML, EL families for internet access. And there are a series of recommendations that the group is making relative to moving forward with providing greater access, including working with the private sector in that regard. And then there are several other intermediate, longer-term issues that the group identified in order to get it right by these students. So there's a lot of concern for all students in the state of Minnesota relative to getting it right with distance learning. This group, and I joined them in that belief, believe that that becomes even more acute with certain populations of students, including EL students, EML students, which are the fastest growing student group in our state and are distributed all over our state and continue to pose some great opportunities for us in the long haul, but in the short term, some real challenges in terms of adjusting our practices. So, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I'm going to forward this letter to you. I'd be glad to do that as well to our minority party leads. And hopefully the commissioner and I and others can have some longer term conversations about how the department can adjust to some of the or can respond to some of the requests here. So thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence to highlight the special challenges and needs of EL students in our state.
Thank you so much, Representative Mariani. I want to read off the list just so members know that your names are getting put on it. I have Representative Grunhagen, Representative Barr, Representative Scott had a question again, but I would rather have Representative Erickson go before that, and then Scott, Baker, and then Moeller. So Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, okay. You can hear me?
Yes, can we can hear you. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, just a quick comment. I want to thank Representative Daphne, too. I know he's passionate about this issue, and it takes a lot of time. But, you know, just back to my first question there, I thought we were only going to move bills forward that had some type of general agreement between the House and the Senate and the governorship, and it sounds like there's still quite a bit of disagreement. I also identify with Representative Scott's comment about private sector workers and the hardships they're falling under. So those are my two concerns, if Representative Daphne wants to respond to that.
First, Representative Grunhagen, I want to just make a comment. Once I call your name, it might take a few seconds for a staff to unmute you. So just wait a few beats and then start talking. And I assure you, if we can't hear you, I'll let you know. And then what I said in the beginning, I'll reiterate again. We're working the bills through the process. They won't be moving to the floor unless they have full agreement. So from what I understand, but I'll let Representative Dabney continue. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, thank you for both of those comments. I certainly appreciate that, the comments. Let me take the shared concern with Representative Scott's comments first, and just largely reiterate what I've already shared, which is none of us are better off if we impoverish school district employees when the school districts have the funds available to them to pay, and as Mr. Omarosa said, are willing and desire to pay their hourly workers. Withholding money from the general economy in our communities does not enrich anyone, and in fact hurts everyone in the process. So I would go back to there's a for good or for ill, there's a fundamental difference in the economics between the public sector and the private sector. And this is a way we can leverage the public sector to support the private sector. As to your concern about a five-way agreement on this and the like, this bill was originally introduced on March 11th, which is about 1.5 lifetimes ago, I think, for many of us. The Minnesota House stepped forward and led on COVID-19 response for Minnesota schools, their staff, their students, and families. We're hoping that we can get to agreement with the Minnesota Senate. And if we're willing to put in additional work to try to get there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, my list is changing in front of my eyes. First, we're going to go to Representative Barr, and then Representative Baker, and Representative Erickson, Scott, and Moeller. So Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. More of a comment than a question. I've heard Representative Daphne twice now mentioned that school districts will have this money. And I mean, it's already allocated to them. It's in their budget. They've received the funds and that they should pay that out. I don't think there's anybody going to disagree with the fact that next budget, next biennium, we're going to have a major shortfall in revenues, and there will be some drastic budget cutting going on. Wouldn't it be smart to at least consider holding that money for the next biennium so that the cuts wouldn't have to be so drastic in for each of them, the school districts next biennium?
Representative Dabney, and maybe Representative Dabney, I know this isn't a finance committee, but you might want to also touch on quickly the money coming from the federal government to the school.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Barr, I appreciate that there is a balance before we as the legislature and before district leaders on we've got a crisis in front of us. We're in the middle of the ocean. There's a storm. We're taking on water. And how much do we start bailing now while we're under threat? And how much do we wait until when the storm is over and the skies are open and blue again and assess at that time? I'm very aware that we're asking folks to bail the boat out now. so that we've got a boat in the fall to get back into and continue our voyage. As to Chair Youakim's reference to the federal dollars, Minnesota will be receiving, it's estimated, $180 million for its schools from the recent CARES Act on the federal level. That's in two pots, and I can't be as precise about it as I would like. The first, the education support pot, I know 90% of that goes out to school districts, so they will have additional revenues there. The governor's pot, I am not clear on the distribution of, nor am I clear on exactly the sizes of those two pots, but districts will be receiving additional federal dollars that will be available to them as well. I hope that allays some concerns.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I wanted to share a little bit about what we've heard, too, with all the good testimony from the hourly employee and the bus driver. I know you guys are doing a great job, and I think in most cases around the state of Minnesota, most school districts are keeping everybody employed right now, and I'm grateful for that. They were fully funded by most of us sitting here that fully funded that a couple or last year. And I am really proud of our districts for doing that. I know that even during the school break here 2 weeks ago with Wilmer and New London Spicer, when they did not have to provide school lunches to kids while they were on school break, our community stepped up and handled that. And we served over 15,000 meals during that week with volunteers and bus drivers and everybody that kind of stepped up at a volunteer level, but community members really stood up. So we're doing a lot of really good things out here. But the word equity is getting thrown around a lot out here, and I wanted to just share, we have to be careful, I think, with the balance here of where we need the funding right now and where we need policy change. I really like a lot of the items in this bill that talk about the policy waivers, the licensure flexibility, the we've got the truancy relaxation of that. These are some really good things right now. I am really proud of our chairs working on this and our leads that this is really good stuff. But I also, as a hospitality guy, I will tell you this other faction of our economy is getting crushed like never seen before. And I'm having a hard time with my heartburn to say that we've got to make people whole right now, this quickly, when so many others are being just devastated right now. And so I want to say that I support a lot of things in this bill. Right now, I can't support it moving forward because of the financial unknowns right now. But I do think there's going to be some needed adjustments down the road. But right now, we are talking about a balance with the limited resources that we have in the state, with small businesses being shut down by law. And we are trying to work on these items in the very large agency of our education department here. But I think we're talking about funding too quickly. I think we're talking about taking away the ability for local school districts to manage their funds like they think they should. And I think we're just hammering on this too much too quickly. So it's more of a comment because I agree with Representative Barr's comments. Next year, our funding will look much, much different. And if we give these school districts right now the opportunity to save a little bit here and there, that means that they won't be able to come back to us and say, you forced us when we could have saved before. So this is a long-term fix. This is a problem nobody asked for. I hope all of our hourly employees get paid everything they want because they're busy. But if literally, if school districts don't have that work, to have folks not working and getting paid is a very hard equity rule for me when I've got folks that are desperately wanting to work and they can't because the governor won't let them. So this is an important issue. I wanted to just share that, but I am concerned that I really do support a lot of components of this bill. I'm grateful for that. I've been a member who supports strong funding in this area. But right now, wow, we are too early, in my opinion, to be talking about needing more funds when we did fund the schools a couple years ago or last year again. And a lot of these districts, and the commissioner, we're going to have to be ready to look at this information. I want to see what the reserves are. the reserves for these districts, because that's a huge part of how everybody is going to have
Representative Baker, Representative Baker, I hate to cut you off, but we have like seven other people on the list and we only have about 15 minutes left. So can you wrap up your comments real quick? A lot of this stuff will be handled in finance. So just if you could be quickly wrap up your comments and if members can be conscious of the time, that'd be great.
Yeah, appreciate the reminder, Chair Yoakim, and I'm completed. So that was my comments. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Representative Dabney, did you have a quick response? Otherwise, I'll go to the next member.
In the interest of time, no.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
And of course, thank you, Representative Dabney, for involving the minority in the creation of this very important piece of legislation. I can't even imagine how hard you and your staff have had to work to put together just something like this, because I've been through it to a certain extent back in 2011, not when we had a closure, but when we had a budget shortfall. I certainly appreciated the testimony from Ed Allies. Like Representative Mariani said, you know, Ed Allies really focuses on the students, and this is a policy committee. And I really believe that we need more direction from the commissioner, or maybe it's not even direction, maybe it's more support for our students who are experiencing something that they've never experienced to the extent that they are, and their parents as well. And I know our teachers are working hard. I hope that, you know, all staff who are involved, you know, according to the governor's executive order and the direction from the department, that all staff are being honored in their positions and that work is being found for them so that when they work, they're paid. But I want more focus on learning for our students. I really appreciate Ed Allies' direction for the future. I know we can't deal with that today, but the learning loss that's going to occur is going to be critical. And I've been reading articles about states where they're considering, you know, a repeat of the grades to for a certain time for students to catch up. You know, the best practices for distance learning has to be reviewed. And I think the commissioner should be definitely monitoring our schools and our charters. You know, we've not heard a thing from our charter schools, but I'm sure they're very concerned as well. But the commissioner needs to monitor, and there needs to be, you know, an input from the department, probably more than there is right now, to make sure that our teachers and our parents have the supports they need. You know, I think in summary, more work needs to be done. I'm trying to work diligently with the Senate Republicans so we can come up with some agreed upon policy changes. So I will not be voting for this transfer today to finance. Thank you.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say thanks to all of our educators and administrators and school staff, parents, and students who are making this distance learning work the best they can. And we appreciate all the hard work that everyone's doing to make that happen. I had a question. And this is also in response to some testimony that students weren't considered in this bill. And Representative Dabney, if you could tell us, are there some specific provisions that are, in your opinion, that are really focused on students and beneficial to students?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Chair Yoakim. Representative Mueller, thank you very much for that question. Responded to the COVID-19 crisis by looking at our schools and continuing the tradition in the Education Finance Committee of putting students at the center of that. This is going to be a disruptive process. It has been a disruptive process for students. We expect, and the department is supporting teachers doing remarkable things to engage learners in genuine learning along the state's academic standards. But I want to make sure that we don't hold students accountable for the impact of a virus on their education. And so working with the minority, coming up with language that both assured by directing the commissioner to make sure that kids who are on track to graduate get to graduate this year. Kids, as I said at the beginning, that third grader this year gets to become a fourth grader next year, while making sure that they are getting access to the academic standards, even though the delivery may be different, the assessment may be different. And it's, as one teacher friend said recently, I think there's a reason we put all the kids in the same room with the teacher on a regular basis. So the experience for students also might be different. We're very focused on the students in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. You had a follow-up? I do, Madam Chair. And Representative Dabney, I just wanted to ask, too, a little bit about these hourly workers. If they're getting paid with the funds that have already been designated for them, doesn't it make sense to keep as many people off of unemployment insurance as possible? Because we know that a lot of Minnesotans are struggling and applying for that right now. And so to the extent we can keep more people off of that, that seems to me like a good benefit for doing this.
Representative Mueller, absolutely. That's also always been one of the goals of this provision. Our unemployment system is overburdened at this time. The more people we can keep off the system, the better the system can work for those who need it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think you're muted.
Sorry about that. Yep, I was. There's a little technological glitch there. So I have got Representative Christensen and then Representative Scott. You mentioned you had another question, then Representative Kunesh-Bodin, and then we will move to a vote. So Representative Christensen.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone, members. Good to see all of you on my screen this morning or this afternoon. I would just like to ask a few questions. My family is full of educators, from, you know, paras to PCAs to teachers to coaches. So I'm seeing how all of us are working or not working right now. I just have a question. I realize, like, the waitresses and people out in the private sector can apply for unemployment and they're getting half wages. But am I incorrect, Representative Dabney, by saying that school employees cannot access unemployment insurance, or am I wrong there?
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, I think of this as a bit of a gray area. At the end of the school year, when an hourly worker's contract would end, they are not eligible for unemployment. What happens in this situation is not entirely clear, but that certainly is a concern that they would be seen as non-qualifying individuals.
Representative Christensen, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. So I think our testifier earlier spoke to the fact that my daughter's a para, single mom, and she always works in the summertime. The wages for paras aren't a living wage. So she always works in the summertime. And of course, there's no jobs out there in the summertime. So, you know, I think Representative Scott said it, that we all are going to share in the pain. But I think we should really recognize and not sort of pit one working group over the other. And, you know, I think that's all that we're asking for, is maybe everyone gets half of what, you know, that, like, unemployment insurance. So thanks to all the paras, all the everyone's out there, and including thanks for my colleagues here for doing everything that you're doing to help this sad, sad situation that we're in. So thank you.
Representative Scott, you have another brief question. Then I have Representative Bierman, and then Representative Kunesh-Bodin, and then we'll move to a vote.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a friend that teaches in a very diverse school district in the high school. And I asked her how it was going. And granted, all these kids have received Chromebooks, every single one of them. And about 50% are logging into Schoolology every day. And she teaches five classes. And but only half of them are doing any of the work, whether it's reading five pages and writing three sentences about what you just read, none of them, 50% are not even participating. And she said the ones that are participating in the couple of the math classes that she had, there's normally a 90% pass rate when the kids are in the classroom. And now 30% of them, only 30% of them are passing the test. So I just wanted to give the commissioner a little bit of an update from someone that's on the street trying to make this work. And I have really grave concerns about the preparedness of our kids going forward because of this glitch. And I know it's not their fault, but how do we hold those kids accountable that have all the tools to log in every day and they're just not doing it? Is there anything that we can do to encourage that or that the school districts can do? Thank you.
Representative
Tabney. I don't think that was directed at me.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that end part. Representative Scott, who are you asking the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the commissioner.
Commissioner Ricker.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, thank you so much for that question. In our distance learning guidance, one of the things we've talked about and we've been helping school districts and charter schools work through is how to be in regular contact with students. And so first, that is just being in regular contact, making sure they know how to use, how to access, if it's on a device or if it's an analog access, making sure that that's happening. And then making sure that students know how to communicate with their teachers if they do have questions. And then that families also know how to communicate with teachers. And then I would say what schools are also setting up then are opportunities regularly. Some schools, it's every 2 days. Some schools, it's every 3 days. If a student hasn't checked in, if they haven't logged on, if they haven't returned a phone call, for example, that there's another check and balance to make sure that that someone is reaching out to that student and connecting with them somehow. And that they've built in layers of connections. With that said, I really appreciate your from the field report because all of these stories and anecdotes help improve our guidance, help strengthen the sort of issues that might be happening in the field that we can come together and help problem solve to make sure that about a week and a half into distance learning, that we can offer better support or we can start making sure that we're sharing successful ideas where they're happening. And so I really appreciate you sharing that with me. And we have been building in these layers of connections to students. And I know our districts and our charter schools have been putting those into their distance learning plans. And as I've gone to websites to read district and charter school learning plans, very often that communication ladder is explicitly mentioned in the plans they have for students and families. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not so much a question as much as just a comment on everything I've heard today. Thanks for everybody's participation and thank you for everyone for all you're doing for our schools. It's an amazing transformation on the fly here that our schools have gone ahead and made so many changes to make it possible for our students to learn, to continue to learn. And each day we have to do a little bit more, a little bit differently. And I think we're all involved in this together to such a degree. And I do appreciate the comments of Representative Scott and Representative Baker and Representative Barr about the other, people out there that are struggling, and I myself am involved in that as well with my own businesses and my employees and the subcontractors I used to use. And we can't solve everything in one bill, but I think for the focus on the education policy and finance that Representative Dabney has done has been remarkable, and I appreciate you keeping the hourly people in that mix and trying to at least handle them there. We're working with on the business side for PPP loans and for subcontractors coming from the federal government. So a lot of these have to come in bits and pieces, and I have confidence they will come, but we need to keep our schools staffed and ready to continue and take care of those folks so they're not on the UI, as you said. So I just wanted to say that, and I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. I've got Representative Kunesh-Podein, and then I'll give Representative Dabney the final word. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Good afternoon, everybody. This has been a really great discussion. I want to thank the bus driver from Sartell, Diane Edmondson. I grew up in Sartell. My friends' mothers were the bus drivers back in the day because they were farmers' wives, and it was a way to help with the income on their farms. And I can only imagine what a difference it makes when those dollars and pennies are not there to help support your family. And also to your husband, I grew up just a block from Desert, so I'm very familiar with what's going on up there. But I just wanted to say a couple of things around the fact or the suggestion that we would help one group of people over the other. I grew up in a family of 13. Some of my brothers and sisters were able to have resources and opportunities that other of us didn't have. And my dad always said, when we'd say, why does one get something and I don't get that? Or he got it and I should have it now. And he always said, quoted to me a quote I've never forgotten and I think about a lot. And it's to those according to their need from those according to their ability. Our hourly workers are really in need of our financial support at this time. We can all tell stories about families that, without the continuing financial support of our schools are going to face terrible, terrible hardship. We all are going to do that. But we have an opportunity. We have the ability to help some of those folks right now. There are 7 weeks left of school. This bill would ask our districts to continue to pay those hourly employees up to the end of their contract for, let's say, 7-8 more weeks. That's what we're asking. Not for the rest of the summer, not through the school year. And if those districts are able to keep the employees busy and active, they can do preparation for next year. There are plenty of ways to look outside of the box and provide that we are going to start whole and we are going to start on a good foot next year. And so I will support this bill. I understand it on so many different levels, the need for it, as well as not just the support of our hourly workers, but those student teachers that are going to be able to start in the fall. With this bill and so many other ways. And so I would encourage everybody to think twice if you're thinking about not supporting it. This is a good bill. It's a good-hearted bill. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of investments. And I just want to thank Chair Dabney for bringing this forward and working so hard on it, and Chair Joaquin for ensuring that we hear it this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. There was one public comment, but it actually is more geared towards the Finance Committee, so I'm sure members can resubmit it then. Do you have any final statements?
I want to thank thank the chair and the committee for their attention, participation, questions, and comments today. But I also really want to thank the education team on both sides of the aisle. Here, partisan and non-partisan staff have put in a remarkable amount of time over the last number of weeks working through iterations of this bill, taking in feedback and updating it, responding to input from the department and others. And it's been a real pleasure and an honor to work with them and see their commitment, full intellect and professionalism brought to bear in the middle of this crisis. So I'm grateful. Members, I ask for your support. We need to respond to the crisis before us, and we need to make sure that communities across the state are as strong and resilient as they can be. And this bill is a step to that as we look at our schools, staff, students, and families. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I renew the motion that House File 4415 as amended be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Is there any questions on the motion? Seeing none, the CLA will take the roll on the motion to re-refer House File 4415 as amended to the Education Finance Division.
Chair Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Kunesh Pudin. Representative Kunesh Pudin.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Baker. Representative Baker. Representative Bennett. Representative Bennett. Representative Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Christensen.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Hassan.
Yes.
Representative Herr.
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Moeller.
Yes.
Representative Sandel.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Wasluwick.
Yes.
Representative Baker. Representative Baker, I don't think we can hear you. Thank you. Representative Bennett.
She had to sign off.
Okay, thank you. Five nays.
Members, there being 12 ayes and 5 nays, House File 4415 as amended is recommended to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. I just want to thank members for your patience and your time today as we all get used to this new technology. I think I give you guys all at least a B+. I think I give myself a C-, but we'll still work on it. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.